supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
The more scientists learn about black holes, the more it confirms the warning, speed kills. Let's look at the latest findings on Sky Talk with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, right off the bat, let's allay concerns. This black hole is in a galaxy some 290 million light years away.
Yeah, nowhere near close to us. We don't have to be concerned about it, but it gives us an opportunity to understand more about black holes. Black holes are supermassive objects out in space that were originally stars that collapsed in on themselves. They retain the mass of the star originally, but they've collapsed so far, their size has dropped dramatically. Yet the escape velocity of that star is now higher than the speed of light, meaning that we can no longer see it. That's why we call it black. And any objects that might wander nearby can get pulled in toward the black hole, typically torn apart and then broken up into matter that can either fall into the black hole or be radiated away from the black hole.
So are they ultimately detected by what we don't see rather than what we do?
Well, in a sense, they're detected by what we don't see. They do create, in the process of destroying other objects, a tremendous amount of X-ray energy. So we can look for the effects of black holes by observing how nearby objects behave in their motion, indicating the presence of a black hole. Or we can look for extreme X-ray sources. The unusual thing about the X-ray source is that it seems to pulsate once every 131 seconds, and astronomers at MIT have recognized that this object has been doing that for about 450 days straight.
Wait, it's doing a lap in a little over 2 minutes?
Yes, that's about right, and this is a gigantic object also. So if you put together the mass of the black hole, which is estimated to be about 1 million times the mass of our sun, and you put together the frequency with which this flash seems to be happening, you can calculate what the rotational velocity is. And it seems that this supermassive black hole is rotating at about 50% of the speed of light. Blindingly fast, almost.
Where is the vault or basement where all this material that falls in is kept?
That's a great question. Everyone always assumes that what happens is material falls into the black hole, goes down the hole, goes through a tube or something of that sort, comes out someplace else. But that's not the way to think of black holes at all. What actually happens when material approaches a black hole is that the material is torn apart, reduced to energy, and then that energy is radiated away in one form or another. So rather than think of this as a drain, you know, like a drain in your sink or your bathtub where water goes down, material goes in and then goes down someplace else, it shouldn't be thought of that way at all. Material is annihilated or destroyed. The energy is then radiated away and the object is no longer in existence.
Do most stars, and particularly our sun, either become black holes or are consumed by one?
No, not at all. In fact, when we think about this, we have to look at stars above a certain size. Three times the mass of the sun, you can have a star that could potentially become a black hole. And while this is typical of what happens to stars, it's not that black holes eat up everything, but one could conjecture that at some time in the distant future, all of those stars above that size turning into black holes in a galaxy will eventually begin to eat up almost everything there is. But that's a long, 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 long way off. No need for us to be concerned about that. In fact, there aren't even any black holes anywhere near us to be concerned about. And our star, for one, is actually too small to become a black hole. It instead will turn into a white dwarf star, another variety of what can happen to a star after it passes the main portion of its life.
Say, Derek, listeners of a certain age remember trying to make sense of the Beatles' title, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. Who knew we merely had to take it literally?
Yes, indeed. Now, theory leads us to understand that a possible fate for white dwarfs is that they actually cool off to the point where their core material, mostly carbon and oxygen, can crystallize to the point where those cores are actually entirely diamond.
How many carats?
The largest number you can possibly imagine. So let's just look at a white dwarf for a moment. Let's take a star the size of our sun And as it ages, it's first going to expand, and then as it blows off its upper layer of gases, once that imbalance between the interior explosion and the crush of gases on the outside begins to shrink the core, that core will continue to shrink until it gets to the point where, as a white dwarf star, it can just balance itself out with the fuel it has available against the weight of material it's made of. Well, that interior core of material will eventually turn into diamond, and we'll probably end up with a star that's entirely diamond core.
How do we get them?
If anyone were ever to consider mining something like this, what a daunting task this is. First of all, we have to find a nearby white dwarf star, right? Well, they're pretty far away from us, so there's the first challenge. Then the second challenge, of course, is can you get through the white dwarf outer material to get to the core? That's a huge challenge. Let's not mention anything about the radiation pouring off of it or the heat pouring off of it or what kind of spacecraft you're going to use to get there to do this, any of those sorts of things. So it's completely impractical for us to consider, but in about 10 billion years, there's a possibility that the core of our star will turn into solid diamond.
What's available to be seen in the night sky this week?
There are still fabulous planets available in the pre-dawn sky. We're now talking between 6 a.m. and 6:30 when Venus and Jupiter dominate the southeastern sky. They're easily visible. You can't miss them. They're not far from each other. And as we move later in the month, the moon will slide up next to those two as well. So in the morning, we have that. In the evening, we have Mars and the moon. In fact, tonight, the moon is not far from Mars at all. So if you go out and spot the moon, you'll be able to see Mars just above and a little to the right of the moon.
And because it's unusual enough, let's pique interest in an event the following week.
Yes, we should put this on our calendars to get prepared for this. It's a total lunar eclipse, the only total lunar eclipse visible to us in this part of the planet this year. It'll be a good one. Starts on the evening of January 20th, next Sunday at about 9:30. It'll be over at 2:30 Monday morning. Totality stretches from 11:42 p.m. to 12:43 a.m., so we have 61 minutes of totality when the moon is in the deepest portion of the Earth's shadow, and hopefully we'll see some beautiful color.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Sky Talk.